We're really happy to have as our next guest Jonathan Schwartz. He's a researcher and producer with award-winning film documentary maker Michael Moore's production company Dog Eat Dog Films. And we've invited Jonathan here to talk a bit about Julian Assange and free speech and the issue of really the crisis in U.S. journalism. Jonathan, thanks so much for making time for us tonight.
Well, it's great to be here.
So I actually was able to contact you through the publication of a recent op-ed piece that was written by Michael Moore, whom you work with, and Oliver Stone, the very famous filmmaker, who addressed the whole issue of the governments of Sweden and the United States, Britain, as well as the news media's complicity in really not giving an honest account of the circumstances surrounding WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and his seeking diplomatic asylum in Ecuador's London embassy. And there's been a lot of vilification of Julian Assange in the media, a lot of focus on the sexual misconduct charges in Sweden, without a lot of attention to the details, which really, I think, sort of sussed out by Michael Moore and Oliver Stone in their op-ed, tell a completely different story. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about your view of WikiLeaks. What do you think is important about the work that Julian Assange and the folks that he works with at WikiLeaks, what have they accomplished, if anything?
Well, I should say, first of all, that I'm here on the radio not speaking for Michael Moore and certainly not Oliver Stone. I agree with their perspective on it, but I don't want them to be tarred with any weird opinions that I have. But in terms of WikiLeaks, it has accomplished, as various people have said, sort of more scoops in the past couple of years than most media outlets would be satisfied with, sort of in their entire existence. Most people, I think, first became aware of WikiLeaks because of the collateral murder video from 2010 that showed an Apache attack helicopter shooting down a ton of people, many of whom were civilians in Baghdad. What was especially shocking about that was the nonchalance and even eagerness with which they were killing people, and they ended up just absolutely obliterating a van that had some kids in it who were very, very badly wounded and just barely survived. They did end up killing their father. That was one of the main things people would know about. They uncovered information about how the U.S. has colluded with the dictatorship in Yemen to lie to both the people of Yemen and the people of the United States, that it is the United States and not Yemen that had been responsible for bombing attacks there. An enormous amount of information about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, WikiLeaks is probably responsible for the fact that the U.S. has withdrawn from Iraq. We were trying very, very hard to keep troops in Iraq beyond the withdrawal at the end of 2011, and it was cables that WikiLeaks was able to release that made the Iraqi politicians, certainly regular Iraqi people, so angry about various massacres that the United States had committed in Iraq that created the political pressure that made it impossible for us to stay. So they've had a huge impact on the political system. A lot of people would say they contributed to the beginning of the Arab Spring. It's really an extraordinary history, and just purely in terms of journalism, they have, as I say, accomplished more than most journalistic outlets could dream of.
So, Jonathan, what about the vilification of this guy, Julian Assange? Now, there are these unresolved charges of sexual misconduct in Sweden, but there's a whole other set of issues in terms of Julian Assange's, I think, well-founded fears of a plan to extradite him from Sweden to the United States in a secret indictment that's been written about in several places. So he has legitimate concerns about what may be at play beneath the surface. But tell us a bit about what part of the story you think our media, in particular here in the United States, is not focusing on in any fair and in-depth way.
Yes. Well, certainly people who pay attention to this and criticize the current situation because of the fact that the two women involved in Sweden are not getting justice, are correct. It's absolutely unfair and unjust that there has been sort of no legal proceedings to deal with their accusations. But the reality is, the reason there have not been any legal proceedings to deal with this doesn't have to do with Julian Assange. It has to do with the governments of Sweden and England, and almost certainly in the background, the United States. Julian Assange is wanted by the Swedish government, and this is something that's a little bit strange for Americans to understand, I think, not because he has been formally charged yet, but in order to interrogate him. And they issued a warrant for his arrest in order to bring him back to Sweden for interrogation. But what most news outlets have not covered is that it is legal for the Swedish government to go and interview people in other countries, and they have done so in the past. And in this particular case, just this week, the Swedish prosecution authority spoke about how it was legal for them to do that, but the prosecutor didn't want to do it and refused to explain why. So from the perspective of Assange and the people at WikiLeaks, it's very difficult to understand why they can't simply come to London, interview him, and then decide whether to proceed with the case or not.
So what is Sweden's official explanation of why they won't do that, as they've done this in other cases? Do they have any public explanation as to why they won't, take a plane and come over to London to talk with Julian Assange?
No, they don't. And in fact, the BBC asked them about that specifically this week, and the spokesman for the prosecutor said the prosecutor has reasons, but does not wish to explain them at this time.
So nothing really.
That's right. No explanation. And beyond that, Julian Assange has suggested, and the government of Ecuador also suggested, that it would be possible for Assange to immediately leave Sweden, or pardon me, leave London to go to Sweden, if it were something that Sweden and the UK were able to agree would not lead him to be extradited to the United States. And what they were seeking was some sort of diplomatic assurances that neither government would allow that to happen. England actually has the option of preventing that under extradition law if they wanted to. So either government could stop it, but both governments, both the British government and the Swedish government, refused to even engage with Ecuador about negotiating the assurances that Ecuador and WikiLeaks sought. And so when you put all these things together, it is a very unusual set of circumstances, and I think anyone who's fair-minded will look at this and say, this does not seem as though justice for the two women involved is the agenda for the Swedish and British governments. It seems like there's something else going on here. And in fact, Craig Murray, who used to be the British ambassador to Uzbekistan, has said just this week that he was speaking with former colleagues of his at the British Foreign Office, who told him that the reason that England threatened to invade the Ecuadorian embassy when they heard that Ecuador was going to give Assange diplomatic asylum is that that they had been getting enormous pressure from the Obama administration to do so, and that, in fact, the lawyers in the British government were adamant that they should not do this, but in the end, British politicians gave in to U.S. pressure. So again, all the sort of public information that's available about this, if not conclusive, because we don't have anyone who's leaked, documents to WikiLeaks about this. If we did, then it might be conclusive. But certainly it's enough to make any fair-minded person, I think, extremely suspicious.
This is Counterpoint. Tonight we're speaking with Jonathan Swartz, a researcher and producer with award-winning documentary filmmaker Michael Moore's production company, Dog Eat Dog Films. And Jonathan is addressing some of the major issues surrounding Julian Assange, his being granted diplomatic immunity in the embassy in London of Ecuador, and his legal issues and journalism. We'll get to journalism in a little bit here, Jonathan. But what kind of leaked information is there floating around about a secret U.S. indictment of Julian Assange, or at least a serious investigation of legal charges that might be brought against him if he were to be extradited from Sweden to the U.S.?
Well, first of all, there's no question, no one disputes that the U.S. government is continuing to investigate WikiLeaks. The only point of contention is whether they have already issued an indictment. Now, the intelligence corporation Stratfor, that some people may have heard of, they're located in Texas, and they sort of call themselves a private CIA. They do a lot of intelligence gathering generally for corporations, but sometimes for the U.S. government. And they have a bunch of ex-U.S. government officials on their payroll. And someone leaked their internal email discussions to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks released them. And surprisingly, what you found in there, or maybe not so surprisingly, was discussion of WikiLeaks. And Stratfor officials were saying, yes, there is a sealed indictment of Assange already, and we're going to get him out of England and bring him to the United States.
Scary stuff, but it can't be corroborated 100%, right?
It can't be corroborated 100%. According to the terms of an investigation like this, certainly my understanding is that it will not be public until Assange is actually in U.S. custody, and that the U.S. government, sort of by law, cannot speak about this type of secret investigation.
What do you make, Jonathan, of some of the attacks by mainstream politicians against Julian Assange and the folks who work with WikiLeaks, claiming that they're some kind of terrorist group? I mean, the language that's used by some folks, Dianne Feinstein, of U.S. Senator from California, just seems so over the top and so vicious. I don't know where this comes from. The United States was certainly embarrassed by these documents, but to claim that the person who facilitated the release to mainstream news organizations like the New York Times was somehow a terrorist just seems totally out of proportion.
It is out of proportion, and the craziest example of that, I think, is Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden, both of whom called Assange a high-tech terrorist, which seems especially weird with Joe Biden because, he's sort of like, well, Assange is a high-tech terrorist. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go bomb people from 40,000 feet using a flying death robot. So that's just a bizarre sort of exaggeration from somebody who really is engaging in killing people with about the most sophisticated technology there is. But in any case, I think what lies behind it is that while it doesn't seem understandable for normal people, for politicians, their whole lives are based on the fact that they're running things and they're in charge, and the idea that anyone is going to defy them drives them absolutely crazy. And again, it's hard for, I think, normal people in the United States to really understand quite how powerful this country is. But the reality is, if you're a big-time politician in the United States, you travel all over the world, and people kiss your feet everywhere you go. You get anything you want. You can make anything you want to happen. And it just makes them berserk with anger in a way that we've seen that seems really strange when witnessed from the outside.
You know, I wanted to discuss a bit about the fact that there's a claim that national security was endangered by these leaks that were allegedly released to WikiLeaks by Army Private Bradley Manning, who's on trial right now. But it seems that the prosecutors, the Army prosecutors, will be hard-pressed to demonstrate any kind of damage, injury, or death as a result of these WikiLeaks document releases. And I'm wondering your view on that. I mean, is this possible? Well, let's just say the witch hunt against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, is it driven by embarrassment or, real tangible harm to the United States and its national security?
Well, I think from the perspective of the people in charge, them not being able to do exactly what they want every second is damage to U.S. national security. But from the perspective of most people, it's not. I mean, in fact, you could make a really strong argument that WikiLeaks has been great for U.S. national security. As I mentioned, they're a big part of the reason why we don't have troops in Iraq right now. Now, in terms of Bradley Manning, I think it's fair to emphasize these are only allegations by the U.S. government at this point, and he has not been convicted of anything. But if he did leak, for instance, the collateral murder video, if he did leak the diplomatic cables, then I would call him, you know, not someone who damaged U.S. national security, but a hero. I mean, he really has shown a very strong light that did not exist before on how our own government works. And we have a right to know this. And we should all be thankful to Bradley Manning, in fact, you know, if that is what he has done.
Jonathan, you know, you read sometimes there are criticisms of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks given the enormous number of documents that were released, just a huge dump of documents, although there was some vetting of those documents by WikiLeaks itself, but also by the mainstream newspapers here in the United States and in Europe that did take a close look before they published these documents or portions of them. But what does it say about the whole notion that WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and his actions were very different from, let's say, Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers, where there was you know, some very specific information and an objective rather than a dump, as some people claim?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think the right person to ask about this is Daniel Ellsberg, who will tell you, this is exactly what I did, and I'm a huge supporter of both WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning, if in fact he did what was alleged. And so I think Daniel Ellsberg is pretty much the final authority on this. The people who are so angry about this are exactly the people who went crazy with fury when Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers. You may know that Henry Kissinger supposedly referred to Ellsberg as the most dangerous man in America. And there were certainly politicians who were talking in exactly the same way about how Ellsberg should be killed. And in fact, I heard an interview with him on C-SPAN recently where somebody called in and was still to this day talking about threatening to kill him for having done this. So Ellsberg says that he's exactly like Bradley Manning. He says that WikiLeaks is exactly like the New York Times and the other papers that published the Pentagon Papers back in the 70s. So I think that's the final word. They're the same circumstances, and the people who pretend to support what Ellsberg did and not what WikiLeaks has done are lying to us.
Yeah, no, it's important that we've had the on our speaking with Daniel Ellsberg on many occasions on this program, and you're right, you know, he stands staunchly in support of WikiLeaks and what they've done with these documents in terms of getting the truth out to the people. Jonathan, what do you make of the U.S. news media and their relative silence on defending Julian Assange and WikiLeaks in terms of releasing information, secret information that provides some insight to the public on the conduct of their government? I confess I haven't read every editorial in all the mainstream newspapers in this country, but it seems they are not really taking a courageous stand here on WikiLeaks, even though they have, many of them, published portions of these leaked documents as news stories.
That's true, and I don't think anyone really knows for sure why the U.S. media and also the British media has been so unwilling to take the side of WikiLeaks. I think a great deal of it has to do with professional jealousy. It's the case that WikiLeaks has come up with all of these scoops, things that a newspaper like the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Guardian in England could, in theory, have done by themselves. You know, the technology that WikiLeaks set up was something that was not sort of beyond the abilities of these places to create, but they didn't create it. WikiLeaks created it, and they made this possible. So as I say, I think part of it is professional jealousy. I think that there's a very strong instinct in the U.S. media to demonstrate that while they may criticize the government every now and then, really they're on the same side, and if the U.S. government is mad at people, then the U.S. media is going to be mad at them too.
That's a sad commentary. Well, it kind of brings me to last here, and maybe important question, and that is the state of U.S. journalism is such that I think generally it's agreed upon that aggressive investigative journalism is such a rare thing these days that it weakens our democracy, where the public can't get critical information that speaks to the corruption and the hypocrisy of our politicians and the failure of our government to do certain things it should be doing. And we can see a lot of that in the election season, the campaign, where it seems the media, more often than not, will just present two points of view, two opinions, two alleged facts, but not do any fact-checking. They won't, you know, do any kind of litmus test of whether a politician is lying or telling the truth. And there's plenty of lying going on in this campaign. But it seems a really stark example of the fact that our media is incredibly timid and not challenging those in power and just sort of being ciphers and say, hey, you know, we don't know what's true. you, the voters, decide. We don't have any clue.
Yeah, that's right. You might wonder what we do all day long. We don't know. Yeah, no, it's true. Walter Karp was a guy who was a writer for Harper's Magazine for a long time, back in the 80s, and he said, you know, you can find out everything you need to know about U.S. journalism by the fact that a special name exists for investigative journalism. You know, he always said, like, shouldn't that just be called journalism?
That's right, that's right.
And he made the point that in the United States, you can judge, like, how timid journalists are and how much they're willing to kowtow to the people in power, you know, by how famous they are. So if they're on TV, he said, you know, you can be pretty sure that they'll do what they're told. So, as you say, it's a sad commentary on where we are now.
Well, how do you think people who support the notion of transparency in government and support what WikiLeaks is doing to get some of the truth out there, how should, you know, activists and non-activists alike, how should we support this organization, or not simply the organization of the man, Julian Assange, but the whole movement towards transparency and openness and getting the truth out there, even if it hurts?
I would say the most important thing that people can do right now, in fact, is to go to bradleymanning.org and support the people who are working to support Manning, because he has been treated absolutely outrageously. The UN has said that he was treated in ways that amount to torture. He should be supported. WikiLeaks as an organization should be supported, whatever you think of Julian Assange as a person. And most generally, what we need to do is build new media institutions. That's the main thing. The ones we got now aren't working.
Well, I'll do a promo here for this listener-supported radio station, which I think is fits in the category of grassroots independent media that needs all the help it can get to stay strong.
Let me second that.
Okay,
this is a great show. I've listened to it for many years. If you care about this thing,
thank
support
you.
Them.
An unsolicited support. No, thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate that. Hey, lastly, before you go, can you tell us any of the projects that Michael Moore and you are working on these days that we can look forward to?
I'm afraid to say I cannot tell you, but they're pretty great. So keep your eye out.
No clue? No hints?
I'm sorry, can't. I wish I could.
All right. Well, I understand, Jonathan. But we'll look forward to staying in touch, having you back on the airwaves here, maybe get Michael on, and appreciate all that you do, working behind the scenes and the films that Michael produces that are very important for all of us in getting critical information out. So thanks for being here, Jonathan.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Is there a website you want to leave our listeners with for Dog Eat Dog Films or any other outlet there?
I would just say to anybody who's curious about Michael Moore, check out michaelmoore.com. There's new stuff up there, interesting information every day. Also check out Oliver Stone's new website, which is just oliverstone.com. And Oliver Stone recently got on Twitter. So if you like Twitter and you like Oliver Stone, check him out there.
Very cool. We'll do that. Thanks again, Jonathan. Appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Jonathan Schwarz, a researcher and producer with award-winning documentary filmmaker Michael Moore's production company, Dog Eat Dog Films, talking about the wider issues involved in WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and his granting of political asylum in London at the Ecuadorian embassy, things that I'm sure we're going to stay on top of in the future.